This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Space City, a NWA on-demand podcast. I'm Pete, fresh off my Mania trip. Had a lot of fun, drank beer, made a lot of great friends. Saw a lot of great wrestling, not much sleep. And then work calls me when I'm back and needs me to come in the morning. That just sucked my testicle. But I'm with my buddy Johnny, and hey, man, Johnny, how you
doing? I'm good. It's good to see that you list those things in order of importance. Drank a lot of beer and made a lot of friends.
Yeah, I know, right? As an alcoholic, you got to have a
pre to this choir. But no, that's awesome, dude. Yeah, I enjoyed what I saw on TV all weekend, got to say, you know, including what we're going to be watching, talking about in just a second. But it was a good weekend. I'm sure that sounds like a blast, man.
I don't want to go into too much, but I just put over Nick Duke hosting the Place to Be Nation tailgate again. Another incredible spread, copious amounts of alcohol that was ice cold. Fun shots, too many shots, a lot of pictures, a lot of fun.
I will say, mentioned this, the tailgating thing and this whole thing to my buddy Chris, one of my best friends. We watch wrestling all the time. And he's like, where's it next year? I was like, it's New Orleans, right?
That's just dangerous because there's no cutoff on alcohol. He
says to me, he's like, let's do it. And I'm like, well, he's like, yeah, it sounds like a blast, but let's do that. But I was telling him about the get-togethers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he's like, why don't we do it? So we're considering it, actually. And I'm like, this is going to be a callback because I've compared to what this is. To when my old days of following the Grateful Dead around the country and going, you know, to see shows all over the country. I was like, oh, one last time, do it for WrestleMania in New Orleans.
A Johnny Taro appearance could be huge.
Mm-hmm. We're definitely talking about it and possibly planning for it. And I was like, I'd love to, but I don't want to do it by myself. And he's all in. I'm like, hey, all right.
All right, cool. Then we'll talk to you later on in the year. Maybe we'll all room together.
Oh, no, you don't want that.
Yeah, you never know. I'm always for making it cheaper.
I'm just like, I snore quite loudly.
Dude, like, that's a turnoff for me. I've been told I'm quite the snorer myself.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But hey, let's get on to the footage. And we're going to look at the two classic matches first. The first one is Killer Kowalski, Gunkel Liskowski, which is ends up being the Crusher, I believe, or Dick the Bruiser, one of the two, versus Mr. Moto, Duke Kiyomura, and the Bolas, and the Great Bola. I think these are cool to put on your television program, but you don't get a whole lot out of it because it's only 5 minutes. But what you do get is a great 5-minute history lesson from Bob Bosch, and the other one is Whisker Savage and Farmer Jones versus Freddie Blassie and Bill Daniel McDaniels. Again, really cool history lesson from Paul Bosch about all these guys and their histories. But really, you know, it's black and white, but the footage is incredible. But again, it's just a little highlight of the matches. But I think if I was running a promotion, I'd probably have a little, like, from the vault type of thing back there. Because I think it's important to respect your history, and I think it's really neat to show it. What about your thoughts?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. We dig these a lot. So what made me laugh, a couple of things made me laugh. I'm sorry, I'm going to start again. So see, Ray Gunkel. And that's the Gunkel whose wife, I think it was Ann, part of George after he died.
Big George.
He legendarily was supposedly one of the guys that died from the heart punch from Ox Baker. But it was something else, obviously. But he was in the ring with Ox Baker, I believe. But anyway, we got me laugh every time Paul said his name. He'd be like, Gunkle, this guy goes, my nephew calls me Gunkle. That's my nickname for my nephew. And it's stuck. That's become my name. So every time I hear it, I just started giggling. I was like, oh, yeah, well, he looks like a handsome, strapping fella. I can associate with this Gunkle. But speaking of strapping guys, young Diller Kowalski, we've heard stories and we've seen some stuff about what his body was like as a youngster before he became a vegetarian and into microbiotics and everything. And boom, the stories are true. Jesus, he's just tall and like, he looks like he was chiseled from marble.
Yeah.
And Paul is like, you can be on my team any day. And you have two refs, and it's funny, it's the 50s. They look like the Hess men, you know, all in white, ready to. You pull into a gas station, you know, and like six guys dressed like that come out to check your air and check the oil and fill you up.
Yeah, like the old black and white commercial they do, like for like the old Robin Hood movie.
Yeah, or like when Milton Berle would come out in a dress, you know, there's like guys who look just like him going, oh, Texaco theater.
Yeah.
And the match itself was amazingly what people look at wrestling in the 50s being silly. Because it's kind of a silly match. There's lots of like silly spots, very planned. The three baby faces come in and catch the guy, and it just sometimes it looks like it's in fast forward. But I love it, you know, because some of these guys, like again, I think Lasowski becomes the Crusher, so he's gonna become a legend. You know, Kowalski is gonna become a legend. Now Moto is already a legend. Bolos apparently was once called the Zebra Kid, and now he's like huge.
Zebra Kid was a huge.
Oh, right, but I mean now I'm like I don't associate Zebra Kid with a guy who looks like he's pushing 400 pounds.
Oh yeah, you know? Right.
And then we have one of these things. I love it when we get a guy I've never heard of, and it ain't Bill McDaniels because I don't care. You know? And Young Blassie is something to see. I finally get to see Farmer Jones. Actually, was supposed to be a farmer, but Whiskers Savage. I saw that name. I'm like, I've never heard of this guy, and that's
sounds like
that's a name a fan like me would not forget. And we get a history lesson on Whisker Savage. And apparently he'd been around since the 30s. And Bosch is saying, you know, the wrestlers like to say, you can judge how old they are by whether, you know, they're talking about young Whisker Savage or old Whisker Savage. He's from the Kentucky Hills. And I said, he does look like a relative. You need to see Whisker Savage to appreciate the joke there. So get the service. Half the time you got to get the service. So that's part of the deal. And Paul's talking about how that in the ring, he was dancing around, explaining about how Whisker Savage was not a great in-ring performer, but everything else he brought to the table was just as important, if not more. He reached out, and you were a part of his family, and he was a part of your family. He comes in the ring with a pet fucking rooster and shit. And I'm like, I love Whisker Savage. I think he's tremendous. I want to know more about this guy. You know, I don't want to watch him wrestle, but I do want to know more about him. And apparently, what they do is they'll do this move where the heel and the baby face grab each other's tights and try to throw each other down. Uh-huh. It's called a side pocket hold, and that's what they do in the hills of Kentucky. It's a feat of strength thing between two fellers. I was like, well, I'm born in Kentucky, never heard of that, but oh, I like it. And then he talks about how many people grew up hearing about Whisker Savage on the radio in the 30s when people would listen to wrestling on the radio, and that's how he became famous. People would describe Whisker Savage on the radio, and that's why he became famous. Like I said, I'm like, that's tremendous. You know, really, you never hear about stuff like this. And again, then Farmer Jones, they mention they're still doing his family tree, and that his real name was Murdoch, and as we know now, he brings up that his descendant or whatever is Killer Tim Brooks, and he doesn't mention Dick Murdoch, but Dick Murdoch's part of the family too.
Yep.
So this is a wrestling family that was none of us were aware of. We knew about Killer Tim Brooks and Dick Murdoch were related, but apparently
and Dick Murdoch's father, I forget the name, was a wrestler.
Now we have Farmer Jones, who's a famous name. I mean, I've heard of Farmer Jones, you know, and there's even that wrestling family. So I love this stuff. It's my favorite little side stuff on the service.
Yeah, it's like real important for the history, you know. It's cool to have and neat. Is it gonna make you? Is it one of the? Well, do you need it to live? No, but it's just a nice. It's kind of like a nice little window dressing, or nice little side item to the service, you know.
Oh, I like I said, I adore it, especially when there's a new discovery here. Like, here's a guy who first got over on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, that's tremendous.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely like bananas when you think about it. Oh, man. Next up, we get Ted DiBiase and the Missing Link versus John Tatum and Jack Victory from August 8th, 1986. And DiBiase and Link have Dark Journey in their corner, and Tatum and Victory have Missy Hyatt. So that adds a little bit more to the match, too, because of their ongoing feud. What were your thoughts here, man?
Oh, well, first of all, Ted's coming out again. I brought it up on the show. We were chatting about it with Parv yesterday. DiBiase comes out to a fucking riot of belonging him at this point. I'm like, and this is a mid-card match, you know, if anything. It's like, oh, at first I was like, DiBiase teaming with Link versus Tatum and Victory this time. He was kind of above that, I thought. It didn't matter, because this is the big Battle Royal show anyway. And, he gets introduced as the Big Cheese, which surprised me because, like, oh, that was his heel name. But he popped for it, and we'll get to more about his heel stuff. And then Bang Your Head hits. And we talked about the Missing Link in a previous show with that I Quit match. And when I said, you know, he wasn't the full Link yet. This is the full Link. He's
green,
and it looks crazy, and coming out to Bang Your Head by Quiet Fucking Riot. And,
yeah, which is like the ultimate 80s anthem when you really think about it, you know.
It's one of them.
One of the first MTV groups made, MTV really made, and songs they really made was probably Quiet Riot's Bang Your Head. It was easily one of the probably top 10 match songs, like it was in their rotation when the MTV first debuted.
I remember being at my aunt's who had cable, and I'd be there like for a week in the summer and around this time, a little earlier actually. And putting on MTV and leaving it on all day. And it was like every hour fucking Quiet Riot was on.
Yeah, always.
And I left it on every time. But
song still is awesome.
Yeah, it's a little cheesy, but it works for the time, man. So it fits his gimmick. He hits people with his head. And that's another thing. In this match, you see Missing Link's headbutts are sold as like getting shot with a gun. You know, and it's awesome because that's his move. And it's bang your head in the chair shit. But speaking of the two rings, John Tatum does a bump over both ropes into the ring where you kind of can see that he definitely jumped himself and he's diving. But it's the most athletic thing I've ever seen that motherfucker do ever. And it's awesome. He just goes, sends himself flying over both sets of ropes and bumps it, does a back bump into the ring. And then coming back in to the right ring, he's walking the ropes like a fucking Undertaker.
Yep.
I was like, and I remember at the time, I was like, I just didn't like John Tatum. I was just like, there's some, especially in World Class, I think I liked him a little more here. In World Class, I just like, I thought there was nothing to him. I was like, I've seen this gimmick, and I've seen it done by hundreds of guys, and I've seen it done better. You know, to get your blonde hair, you got a robe. I get it.
Yeah, I always thought like Tatum and Victory is kind of like a third rate Midnight Express third-rate dynamic duo, that type of, you know, ilk, in a way.
But here, I'm, like, getting more impressed. Because I think you're working for Bill Watts, you know, and we're just working a little harder, I guess.
Yeah, I like Tatum more than you, it sounds
I'm growing to like Tatum a lot more than I did. Most of my memories of John Tatum was when I was 15, 16 years old.
Gotcha.
But he's still one of the sleaziest-looking motherfuckers ever in wrestling, okay?
Oh, without a doubt. So, and I still think his Hall of Fame appearance when Michael Hayes went in was one of the most sleaziest moments of all time.
But there was a great double knock-knocker with Ted and Tatum where they both just – they do the double knock-knocker and they both do, like, snap back bumps. That makes it look real, you know, instead of hokey. We got, of course, at the end, you know, the good guys win and – And Missy, who hasn't really been cheating, by the way, as soon as the match is over, she's trying to get Dark Journey hunts her down and is going after her. And she's ragdolling the shit out of her and pulling her hair, just like we've talked about before. Just like, Jesus Christ, lady, fucking knock it off. You know, it ain't real, stupid. You know, and, But then, out of nowhere, the Freebirds attack. They attack DiBiase, their arch enemy. You know, and boom, it's all three of them. And Buddy Rogers is keeping the link out, and Hayes and Gordy were trying to break this motherfucker's neck again. You know, and eventually the link gets past Roberts. They come in, those headbutts tapping, and Link is saving him with those headbutts. And the way Gordy and Hayes sell those headbutts is amazing. Again, like they've been shot. But then Ted has the black glove, and he puts that black glove on his hand up like this, and it's like, it's on now, motherfucker, and I'm popping like crazy. And again, I'm saying, at least based on these Houston matches, I think what we talked about, I was like, he should have been UWF champ at this time.
Yeah, it really does. And I know if Watts was always a big, like, he's
the guy you put in the
hand. He's the hand, yeah. Well, he felt the money was in Gordy and stuff.
I just, based on these reactions we're seeing here, these people love him so much. And he's handsome Ted with a feathered hair and beard and, you know, bleached just a little and powder blue tights. But everyone knows that if you piss him off too much, he's Ted DiBiase. He has everything needed in the character at this time. He comes up in USA for fuck's sakes.
Yeah, I think part of it also, they could put him on top, they can put him here, they could have him work opening match. That's the thing. I think he was so versatile. It was like a guy you could plug anywhere on the card and he could do it.
I still think the thing is, he's super tall. You know, he's a big guy himself. But
you know
what Watts wants, and like when he was choosing his top babyface around the time, he went with Doc, who had more of a amateur background and was more big, is bigger and more rugged. And that's what he liked. And Doc's face, I love Doc, but he wasn't as good as Ted.
Oh, no.
Especially this time. And he wasn't as over as Ted. So, the UWF would have gone out of business no matter what, okay? Based on what we know.
But it's just Houston, too. You got to remember, there's also, Mid-South was running Oklahoma quite often.
But,
and that's where Doc was, you know.
That's true. That's true. You see, these reactions are above and beyond anyone else's, though, that we've seen.
Oh, yeah, I agree. He was the most over, besides Duggan at this time, was probably the most over babyface in the territory.
Duggan was just about to leave.
Yeah, he was just about to leave if he's not already left. But yeah, he's just about to leave. He's still around. I enjoyed this. I'm a huge, first of all, I love Bang Your Head. I'm really digging. I dig the fact, you know, we have Missy and Journey angle going on, and adds like another wrinkle to the match, even though they didn't really play out at all. I thought there was a pretty fun shine with Tatum and Victory stooging, and DiBiase is great as that standing tall babyface. That's another thing. DiBiase is kind of like Barry Windham in a way, where they're both deceptively tall, but they can also get small. Which not a lot of people can do. Dustin Rhodes was another guy who was really good at getting small and could be tall when he needed to be. Like when he was feuding with Vader, he could be tall. But when he was working, like a smaller baby face, like like Steve Austin or Bobby Eaton, Dustin was able to get small. Yeah,
I think with DiBiase, it's one of those things is he came from an era where everyone's a fucking giant, and so was he. But on TV, he's surrounded by guys with more muscles and everything, but you look at me, well, he's just as big as these guys.
Yeah, it's true. It really is. I like DiBiase charging Tatum in the corner, and he takes that shoulder bump, and that sets up the heat. I thought DiBiase was real good in the face and peril, and I mean, pretty much he carried his team, because Link was, you know, just all headbutts and character at this point. I thought the heat segment was okay, but I didn't think the heels did anything all that interesting. I mean, they clamped on headlocks and this and that. It wasn't anything that really engaged me. I loved the Freebirds run in. I thought that added a lot. And you know, because Doc isn't here, so I thought it was really interesting that they're, you know, double teaming Ted. And even though DiBiase wasn't the legal man, he got the pin, which they, you know, they allowed. And I think that's, I always like that type of excuse where the heel can use that as an excuse. I thought Link's hot tag was fun with all the headbutts, and then we got what we needed from him, which was like the headbutts. I enjoyed the I don't endorse unprotected chair shots, but back then they didn't know about all the damage it was going to cause.
Yeah, but that chair shot was amazingly light. It was very safe.
And I liked Missing Link. They're putting over the head that even chairs don't bother him. So I enjoyed that. That was like a good solid 2.5-star match. Nothing incredible, but I thought it was a good solid match that ate up some time on the card and stuff. Then we got over into the Battle Royal. And this is on the same date of August 8th, 1986. This is the two-ring Battle Royal that Houston worked a lot. And actually, it really helped him helped him with elements of storytelling, if you will. Because using the both rings, they were able to add a couple more wrinkles in a Battle Royal that you might not normally get. What you make of the Battle Royal, man?
Okay, so since there was no announcing on it, I wasn't aware of the rules. And so when Mendoza ends up in the empty ring, I was just like, what's he doing?
But it's self-explanatory.
It becomes self-explanatory. Right? Well, yeah. At first I think, okay, is he being like the heel who's hiding? You know, because it's a Battle Royal gimmick, you know, the heel who's hiding. But I was like, wait a minute, it's a two-ring Battle Royal. And then I'm like, oh, Hayes gets tossed. Oh, no. Some other people get tossed. No, Hayes, I think. And he gets in there with Mendoza, and they fight for a second. I'm like, oh, I see now. I get it. But even then, I didn't know what the payoff was. I'm like, do the final two guys in each ring have to have a match, or how's it work? And then it all just explains itself. But Hayes just then like takes a little bit of offense from Mendoza and then just kicks his ass. Beats the shit out of him and bosses up. And then we get Buddy Roberts ends up in the ring. And so it's the two Freebirds, and they're not going to have a fight. But Michael Hayes, in just a great little bit of knowing what he's fucking doing, realizes that they're not going to have the Freebirds fight, but they don't want to have them just standing there with their thumb up their ass until the next guy gets thrown over. So he goes back into the other ring and grabs a guy and pulls him over.
Yeah, so, I have that too.
So they got something to do. And that's great. That is thinking on your feet. So it's a battle royal. Okay, it is what it is. And then at one point, One Man Gang pretty much just tosses everybody into the other ring, and he gets time to wait around, and he's busted open.
Yeah, he's busted open to start the match, so yeah. It must have been a match that happened earlier on the card.
I got busted open.
I think he might have wrestled Duggan in a chain match. Don't quote me on that. I haven't looked at the card. But there's something.
Duggan was in the Battle Royal, so yeah.
Yeah.
And
this second time I've seen actually in a Battle Royal, One Man Gang starting out busted open in a Battle Royal. Because I've seen it mentioned it a couple times on Facebook. He said he's never had worked more Battle Royals in Mid-South bloodied open to start a Battle Royal than any place else he's worked.
That's funny. And Duggan, you know, I mean, when he gets tossed, it's like, there's a lot of guys left in the ring, you know, for Duggan gets tossed. So maybe the writing was on the wall, maybe. But somebody gets down to it. It ends up the Freebirds. And I didn't even realize he was in the ring. But like, who's that Chavo? And that's the favorites of Chavo. And then so I start to think it. I'm like, okay, is this Houston? This is Chavo's town. This is Paul Bosch's town. But we're talking Bill Watts books these things. But this is the Paul Bosch tradition Battle Royal. She's got a little bit of say in the booking of this one match. So that's all I'm thinking is this is going to end up with Gordy. And Doc, Gordy and One Man Gang. And Chavo's in there towards this point just as like the last true baby face. And that's a tip of the hat to the crowd and to Paul Bosch. But oh, no. Ted DiBiase comes out, you know, Spirit of 76, and takes on both fucking Freebirds and tosses both fucking Freebirds. And then it's like, it's One Man Gang now and Chavo. But it's not a one-on-one match. It's still a Battle Royal. And I'm going, oh, okay. Chavo is getting to be the last guy in the ring, but One Man Gang is winning this. You know, but Chavo gets that spot because he's Chavo and it's Houston. No. Chavo fucking wins the fucking Battle Royal, and it's awesome. I popped out of my seat. I was just like, I was watching this with some interest of what was going on, like the Hayes thing and this and that. Again, it's going to be One Man Gang and Gordy clubbering each other. I've seen that. But no, this Chavo girl wins the $50,000 in the middle of the fucking ring. And the place goes fucking apeshit. And I'm going apeshit watching it because I was like, I didn't see it coming. Well, until it was happening, you know, but I was like, no. boom, I popped. I popped like a motherfucker. I loved it. Loved that finish.
And I mean, it says a lot for Woman Gang, too, to be able to do that athletic elimination spot with Chavo, you know. A lot of big guys, I don't know if could have taken that bump, for starters. But yeah, you know, and also it's a cool way to protect Chavo, because he's really, you know, Houston's probably one of his best towns at this point, and especially in the Mid-South territory, because he's had such a huge run in Houston from, I mean, we've seen him like forever almost on all the footage from when they weren't working Mid-South, when it was Southwest, and when Bosch was just bringing in guys. Chavo was always a guy he brought
in. He's his guy, you know.
Yeah.
He's his guy.
He was on, and he was one of the few guys when Bosch made his retirement, he asked for Chavo to work it. So, yeah, he's definitely one of his guys and stuff.
And, you know, like, we were talking about this, like, off the air, but, you know, yesterday. And, well, who booked the shows? And, well, you know, Watts had the book. But, like I said, I think the traditional Battle Royal, which is Houston's thing, I'm sure that's the one where they're like, we don't give a shit if he was the Battle Royal.
Yeah, and I'm sure Paul, like, can we have him do that? And Watts is like, yeah,
fine. He probably understands it and says, okay, yeah, sure. You know, with the agreement, everything else, that's ours.
Yeah.
No problem. Because it doesn't hurt anybody.
Doesn't hurt anybody. You know, already everyone else is going to lose, so there's already going to be X amount of losers. Who cares? Yeah,
it's a Battle Royal, though. It's like no one's really losing. You know, it's... It's just better, but it got me to thinking real quick before we move on. The idea of like the town that has the traditional battle royal, you know, like Houston had it, you know, Los Angeles had it, Minneapolis had it. And I was just like, well, you know, WWF never had it. I'm like, then I thought about it, I'm like, no, wait a minute, WWF has had it, and has had it since 1988, because that's Rumble.
Yeah,
they just tweaked the battle royal rule a little bit, just like Bosch does here with the two ring gimmick and everything. But they tweaked it in 88, and they've had it done it ever since. So the idea of the annual battle royal, that's a big deal, still exists, you know. And I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, it's there. And in Lucha Underground, they call it Ultima Lucha, and they've tweaked the rules a little bit more where pins and submissions count too. But it's the Ultima Battle Royal.
But it's a year and it's a big deal. Like, is it once a year?
Yeah, they do it once a year on TV. It takes up the whole hour of the television.
There you go.
And every time, except for last year, every other one has been, they've gotten rave reviews. Like, they even like it better than the way the Rumble's set up with the new rules. Yeah, but it also, because it's a little bit more action-packed. But
it does speak to the idea. Everything is like, the whole, like, and every Christmas we have the annual Battle Royal. And for us even, and the younger fans, I can imagine what that sounds like. They're like, why is that such a big fucking deal? It's a battle royal. We don't even like battle royals.
Yeah.
Like, no. A, people back then did. That's why they did it. The battle royals drew huge. It was a chance to bring in Andre and a lot of them.
Yep.
But it was also some people popped for them. They liked battle royals. People loved them. And to this day, people still do, because the Rumble is just, it's a battle royal.
Yeah, so, even here, I mean, we have a story. And like a lot of battle royals, that's the problem, is they just, you go out there and people think it's an easy night off. But if you book it properly, and I felt here, it was well booked, you know. Like example, like you talked about the Birds being eliminated early, so they're in charge of ring two. You see Duggan throughout the match, and then you feel like he's like this force of nature. You know, Woman Gang winning the first ring, that makes sense, having a monster win it, you know. You see, and it's also because he has the blood, you know, so he has this bloody monster won the first one.
What it also does is a battle royal can be a long affair, and it's the end of the night, and all these guys have worked. This was only 12 minutes long, but you have the 1 minute, because everyone has moved from one ring to the other.
Yeah.
And at one point, they go, okay, where are we at? Okay, one man gang, go. And he just throws everybody over so they can get this match going. It's great, great booking.
Yep, and then the barrage of eliminations was done really quick. They were done so quick, and no one gets hurt, you know, and stuff. And then you get this, then the drama down the stretch where you have Gordy and Buddy Roberts is the final two in ring two versus Chavo. Then Ted, babyface Ted, comes out, Spirit of 76, and helps even the odds and eliminates the Freebirds. And that leaves one-man gang in Chavo, which is big man, little man drama. And, you know, everyone's thinking Chavo doesn't have a chance, but he uses his fly-flying Lucha Libre high body thing, and one-man gang takes great bump over the top rope.
Because he does the scissors over the thing.
Over the top rope,
You know, and gang, to all of his credit. But Chavo, at this time, also, Chavo was old at this time.
Yeah.
It wasn't a young superstar. They even did that for him, and the crowd was apeshit. I loved the finish of this.
Yeah, you get to get the vet, you know, on his, like, final, maybe his final run with the company, Chavo, or this might be his big last big win in the territory.
I can't imagine he had a bigger win in this territory than this at this time.
At this time, no, probably not. You know, this is probably, like, kind of his, he looked like he was in a feud with, like, Buzz, and really, yeah, he looked like he was just, you know, he was a mid-card, he was, like, maybe the number four or five babyface in the territory, which, you know, that's not whole high, that's not very high. And so, yeah, I can totally see this being a big moment. And I thought the booking, that's the thing here. It booked it right. That's why Pat Patterson, one of the labels of why he's a genius, is how he set up the Royal Rumble and being his brainchild for so long stuff. Why don't we take a break here? And we'll be back, and we'll finish up the final two matches with our Fantastics versus Sting and Eddie Gilbert matches.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back. And we're back here looking at the first Fantastics vs. Sting and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert match, which is September 9th, 1986. And, you know, looking at these two matches, the next two matches, they both go over 30 minutes. And this is with a young Sting, everyone knows the kind of the history of Sting, where the two key guys in history, or the three key guys, people say was, well, he was original tag partner with Ultimate Warrior. People always mention how Eddie Gilbert was a key, and how Gilbert saw a star in him before anybody else. And then Rick Flair got his claws into him in NWA Crockett in 88, and really made a star of him at the Clash of Champion 1. But the Fantastics are almost become like a footnote, where I think they really have a big say, or they had a big influence on really developing Sting. And they had a good 6-month feud between the Fantastics for Sting and Eddie Gilbert. I think they passed the tag titles belts around a few times. And I felt they were the ones who were kind of like putting the final touches on Sting as a act, getting to work long stretches and working with two really good workers. And I feel Sting learned a lot from Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, and I felt like you could see a lot of it in these two matches. What do you think about that?
I think that's – I wrote down something similar. Okay. Not that it was particularly the Fantastics, but that you mentioned that's true because he's in the ring with them. But there's at one point during the first match – it's towards the end, and Sting is gassed, and he's breathing through his mouth. Yeah. He's leaving the ring, and he's got this look on his face like, you know, he isn't that gassed. He's an athlete because he keeps going for a little while longer. But yeah. he's sucking wind, and he's got this look on his face that where you're seeing that he's getting it.
Yeah,
that he's getting it. So he's in the ring with, I mean, Eddie Gilbert, of course, is his partner. He's leading through this. He's in the ring with two fucking amazing guys in Fulton and Rogers to also help lead him. And he's Sting. He's got enough natural fucking talent, you know, to be. I don't want to say, and they carried him because he did well.
Yeah.
He was doing well, you know, but
there were clearly some spots. Like an example would be when when Sting and Bobby Fulton were throwing punches, and it looked like Sting was getting a little, not trying to, but was getting a little heavy handed with the punches, and then you see Bobby Fulton just clamp on the headlock and flip him over and like, all right, kid, let's take it easy, calm down.
Well, that's just it also, because when you get to punching stages, you know, you have to learn that shit and everything. But it wasn't like he flipped him over and stretched him. It was like, oh, no. Hey, calm down there.
No,
kid.
This is the guy trying to teach a young guy how to work.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you saw another spot was with Tommy Rogers, where you can actually see him. And this is me just being a guy who's watching way too much damn wrestling. I mean, if you're from your average fan, you didn't see it, but you actually see Tommy Rogers put Sting completely in control for the do a monkey flip. And totally set the spot up, put Sting in the position for it. It was kind of like almost like Regal in a way, working with a young guy, putting him in holds and counter holds and stuff. And it was just a real neat thing. But these are elements that are showing the youngster, hey, look at this. And I think these are building blocks that made Sting one of the wrestler that he became.
Yeah, I agree. And you also have Bobby Fulton, you know, also, as far as quote-unquote in-ring stuff, totally giving Sting a lesson as well.
Yep.
He's giving Sting more of the lesson of how to perform.
Yep.
And how to react, because Bobby Fulton in these two matches is fucking tremendous.
Totally agree.
He's so good. Oh, piss me off when people will be like, well, the Fantastics were great. But Tommy Rogers was really great, but Bobby Fulton really kind of sucked. And I was like, oh, go fuck yourself. Bobby Fulton was awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
We've had this conversation before. I felt Fulton was like kind of understood the gimmick and the showmanship. Yeah, Rogers was more of a nuts and bolts worker, but they complemented each other so well.
And
they're two different styles of working, but they're both working, you know, and combined, they were like peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, and Tommy Rogers has had a lot of charisma as well, man. He totally did too. But he was more like, you know, oh, look, he does a cool drop kick and you know, and he's doing Ricky Steamboat-ish stuff, you know, and like, oh, he's Fulton's doing Memphis. I was like, yeah, you know what? Good. And we've had that talk before. In this match, I just want to go over a few things. And it would be like, so we get to the second match, I'm not going to have as much time because this is about like what these guys are.
Yeah.
But in this match, when Sharp-Dressed Man hits, the goal pop for the Fantastics sounds like the Beatles on Ed Sullivan for about like 3 seconds. It's not as sustained as the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, but the initial pop is, and it's all girls screaming and pissing their pants, and then just boom. Because, yes, both of these matches are over 30 minutes long. However, this match, 15 minutes of that is the Fantastic's entrance. But in all honesty, it's 6 minutes and 30 seconds in. There's one punch, and then they go back to just playing the crowd and playing the crowd. And then it's like, I made notations, 7:07, Sting's posing in the ring to try to be intimidating. And they're back off. It isn't until 7.5 minutes of this 31 minutes that the match actually starts.
Yep.
At one point, Bobby Fulton is leading a chant against Sting, and I can't. It sounds like he's got them chanting Rocky at Sting, and it's getting to Sting, and I'm like going, that can't be some sly reference to the fact that the other Blade Runner was called Rock, because that's way too fucking complicated for this fucking crowd, or anybody, really. That'd be stupid. And I don't, so maybe I'm not hearing it right, but it doesn't matter. It gets under Sting's skin, and then Bobby Fulton, because it took him a while to get him to do it, enough young girls did it. Sting reacts to it, and Bobby Fulton does this like sly look up to the chief seats and raises his hand just a little, indicating, no, I didn't do that. We did that. We did that. Again, yep. It's that connection with that crowd. And again, it's like, it ain't all, this ain't the dynamic dudes where every guy in the audience was like, go fuck yourself. And no. The dudes like the Fantastics too, but the girls really like the Fantastics. Oh, yeah. I love a screenshot of when he does that. When he does that sly, just back up. No, you know, it isn't me. It's the power of you through me. And I was like, oh god, dude, that's to me. That beats a million fucking 5-star matches. That's wrestling. And then Fulton has that great punch sequence with Eddie Gilbert. So you got two Memphis fuckers.
Yeah, two punches. Memphis punches.
Fantastic. And the finish is all kinds of bonkers. And the finish really reminded me of the fact that ECW at first was heavily booked and then even influenced after he left by Eddie goddamn Gilbert, because it felt like ECW. Insane crowd. Everything was going crazy. Kind of felt like ECW. The titles are held up again. The screw finish. Doesn't matter. Place is going apeshit. And the only odd thing is the match is clearly over. The bell's ringing, it's out. And when the baby face are getting their revenge on the heels, Tommy Rogers does a roll-up.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
it kind of adds to the insanity of the finish, because it's what some would call a fuck finish. I don't care. You first told me we were going to have to do, and that's not even this match, over a half hour long Fantastic Sting and Gilbert match. All I can think of, Green Sting, I remember him at this time, wasn't that good. I forgot how good these matches were, or else, and after this one, and before I watched this one, I'm sorry, I looked at it, I'm like, oh, we have to do two? And they're both this long? And now I'm just like, well, I don't care. I thought this match ruled. And the finish did not bother me whatsoever. Love this.
I'm with you. I enjoyed the hell out of this. The Fantastics really have really come across kind of like really a key component here in Houston. Like kind of like how the Rock and Roll Express were key in Crockett, and they were key here too. But it feels like Houston is Fantastic.
You know that's a good point. And to the point, when Rock and Roll Express were super over in Mid-South, and they were super over in Houston too. Houston, but maybe more in the Louisiana area of in New Orleans and all that, because like Houston is like exactly what you just said. Houston is the Fantastics town, man.
And then they've come out to the ZZ Top, which is also, well, ZZ Top was a Houston band, so I mean that's where they got that's where they start from. So there is that rub too, and I think that also helps. And I think they were a little bit better looking than the Rock and Roll Express. I think they just related. I think Houston was obviously there's a shitload of girls here in the stands. obviously, because we see them all mob the damn front row. Even though I think the Fantastic can be a little formulaic at times, it doesn't bother me. No, I'll tell you though, like, why? Because I haven't seen them do a bad performance or a lazy performance on this whole entire Houston footage. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it gets guys, you're like, okay, it's going to be a squash. And they'll have fun with them for 10, 12 minutes. They just eat up time, always having a good match on the card. I loved early on, we see the heels begging off to start. I loved Sting backing into a Tommy Rogers punch. It was like they bump backs and they turn around and Rogers knocks him one with a punch. I loved, like you're talking about, Sting healing it up with the doing the body posing and stuff. And it almost feels like this is like a different, it's like this is like Earth 2 Sting. Because it's so, we were so used to him being like the ultimate babyface. And besides like the Vince Russo time when they tried to turn him. And that, you know, he was always been like a babyface. So it almost feels weird seeing him here.
The only Sting heel turns was the brief in WCW and TNA. And who gives a shit?
Oh yeah, you know, but
exactly, because it was like, now you remember this. I remember this. So I was like, I remember Sting as a heel. You know,
yeah.
It didn't last all that long. Maybe a year. Two,
yeah.
That's it. You know, and then he'd be babyface for like the next 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it just feels different, you know. I love the visual of Fulton and Sting being nose to nose. I really enjoyed the stalling and the bullshit early on because it was fun, you know. It wasn't boring. It was entertaining. And I'm really enjoying the Fantastic shine. It's like they started slow, and they're making everything count and mean something here. And I felt they're really great at milking and making the most of these moments. Fulton, especially good at these type of things. That's where he's so good on the team, is at like you're talking about the stare into the crowd. He's great at just like. Even just when he puts his stupid arms on his waist, doing like the Superman stance, it's just fun and able to get reactions on just by looks and by body language and stuff. And I absolutely love how they're working with Sting here. Watching Tommy Rogers Sting for spots was amazing, especially the monkey flip spot. Fulton putting himself in holds for Sting to catch his wind, I thought was really amazing. And now it's time for the heat. And I loved Fulton's bump to set up the arm work. It also adds later on to the 2 out of 3 story of the next match we will talk about, where Gilbert starts working over Fulton's arm. Because when we first saw these on the service, we got him out of order. So it was like, okay, he's working the arm, big deal. But it actually started here. And I really liked that. I thought Eddie was fantastic directing traffic and causing like misdirection in the match, and then all that which allowed Sting to shine and stuff. And Gilbert really gave a lot and really gave a lot to Sting, and that sounds weird. We mean he gave a lot to his partner. He allowed Sting to have a lot of shiny moments where Gilbert was the foil, got his ass handed to him, to allow Sting to make the save on Eddie or to free Sting up or whatever. Love the double team cutoffs by the heels. They're well done, well timed. The miscommunication spot between Sting and Eddie Gilbert to set up the comeback was fantastic. I thought some of the sloppiness added to the match, and I liked how the titles were held up to set up a 2 out of 3 falls dip. Good solid 3.25 star match. These guys chewed up 30 minutes and did it well. It worked smart and laid out a match with a pretty green guy, but you know what? We saw him coming of age here in these two matches, and this is kind of like the template of what, you know, what we were talking about earlier of becoming Sting, then graduating on to Ric Flair, and then, you know, and then finally being able to be a damn pretty good hand.
Oh well, I think so. I was like saying, but here is, I remember watching this time when I first saw the Blade Runners. I'm like, oh, another Road Warrior buff, and these guys, and they stink, I remember watching Sting, me and Wolfman at the time, going, this guy ain't bad. You know, we can tell. And that we're 60, but we know the business, you know, well, you know, we know enough, you know, to know what we're watching. And, but I was like, oh no, he's going to be okay. And he continues in UWF doing a lot of cool shit. But before we move on to the other match, going back to the crowd, I forgot I took this note, and I really love this, is during the Fantastic, you know, 37-minute entrance, they hug every fan, they hug every chick. That barricade was really close.
Yeah.
And those people were like falling over it. And there was one section of little Mexican kids, and they were boys, and they were all together, you can tell. And they were being slammed up against the fucking barrier where they're kind of climbing over it. And the kids were like wearing baseball shirts and stuff. And the Fantastics go right over to them. And these little kids have this look on the face like these are our heroes.
Yeah.
And they're like in awe of these superheroes that are in front of them who are giving them high fives. And like, yeah. And these kids are like, I mean, let's face it, usually you see when the Fantastic come out, every chick in the place runs to the fucking barricades. And we have a lot of jokes to make. This was these young kids who probably, you know, family had to save up, you know, whatever, you know, ringside seats or they ran down from the cheap seats, whatever. They got there together as a group of buddies or family and got a high five from their heroes. And you see it in the look of this one kid's face. He's wearing a red, white, and blue shirt with like numbers on it. And you can tell he's like, it's all worth it. Yeah, because I fought. I was the smallest kid in this riot. And he fought his way to that barricade and got a high five from Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton. And he looks like he's never been happier in his life. And I see that, and I'm just, it's the coolest thing. I love it.
Agreed. Totally agreed. And that leads us to the next match, which was like 2 weeks later or so. Let me see here.
One was on the 9th and one was like on the 21st. Something.
Yeah, this one is September 21st, 1986. And it's Two of the Three Falls. Another really strong match. You know, again, Houston loves them some Fantastics. We get an early shine with both heels stooging, setting up payoffs. And I thought Sting was even better in this match. The test of strength with Sting sets up the heat. Gilbert was great against setting up distractions for Sting spots. Fulton was great at facing peril in this first fall. Hot tag, and Rogers is on fire. And eventually, though, the heels cheating pays off, and they get it. Second fall starts with the heels beating down Rogers, and they really milk the drama here, really beat the crap out of Rogers. Fulton gets in, and he's able to steal a fall. And the third fall is for all of the marbles. We get a big slugfest, and then a big crossbody sends both to the floor. A great double pin is teased, and I love that with 2 out of 3 falls stiff in the final fall, but it's only a 2. I love the Fantastics hitting a top rope heart attack, which was pretty freaking awesome. Tatum and Victory get involved here, and we get the Fantastics pulling off the victory and getting the titles. Great moment, and this is the, now we have the two heel teams getting together, and because of Missy, and this is where it's coming, and it's becoming a pretty heated angle here, and this was eventually going to spin off Sting into a babyface role out of this angle. Just fantastic stuff. Again,
no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. But the Fantastics are really a footnote in the history of Sting that I don't think gets looked at quite enough, honestly, because I feel these are some of the matches that are some of the first really good Sting matches are the tags with
totally.
And a few of them made the Mid-South set, but most of them were like 11 or 12 minutes. But seeing them give these guys pace out 30 minutes with Sting, and I mean, 3 out of 4 guys, they deserve so much credit, and so does Sting. By, he didn't stand out. He didn't look like a sore thumb or a fish out of water. He carried his weight, and I thought, bravo for him.
Well, also because at the time, I believe they were doing also Sting and a young green Rick Steiner were tag team partners, and Eddie would be managing them and giving them, you know, teaching them from the manager position. But when you're in ring, you know, you can really teach a lot more. But I love this because apparently, because the last match was a title held up, Sting and Eddie are the champs here. And at the end, the fans don't win because it's 2 out of 3 falls match, and the last fall is a DQ.
Oh, was it a DQ out at the Fantastics had the belt?
No, the Tatum and Victory came out and caused the disqualification. And the fans then doing one of those things, just have to roll your eyes at and go, it's wrestling. It works for the crowd. Is they know the 2 out of 3 falls match, the last match ended in a DQ. they should know that means they don't win the belts, but they're holding up those belts, and the referee's telling them no, and the crowd's going apeshit, and they're like, what do you mean we're not the champs? It's like, you've been in this business for a while, you know that, but you don't do that, you know, you play it up for the crowd. Yeah. And of course, because then he steals the belts at the end, you know, and he's like, no, we're not going anywhere, and he has and Bobby Fulton's leading the crowd like he's a Baptist preacher, having them chant no, no, no. And then, in fact, the other match,
didn't he,
didn't he
become a Baptist preacher?
They all do. What the fuck? He works with DiBiase now. The only things I have to add to this, because we talked already, but I like the first match better. I preferred the first match.
So I like the second match better, but I not by much. I gave this one 3.5 versus 3.25, so they're pretty interchangeable. And stuff.
I thought the first one was more chaotic, and I like that better. But anyway, there's a fan losing her shit, because I have to mention, no commentary, but the mics are hot for the crowd.
Both these matches were super hot, you know?
But this one, you're picking up people at ringside talking.
Oh,
every
yeah.
now and then. Because you hear one guy go, well, you know, that's what happens when you get, you know, ringside seats or something like that. You know, that's what you got, that's the price you got to pay to sit up front, you know, or something like that. And which also led to my favorite thing. I mean, he'd save for this. Is when Tatum and Victory come out and end up in the brawl with Sting and Gilbert. The gimmick was that, you know, Missy had been stolen by Eddie, which happened in real life. Okay. So they're going at it, and you hear one guy go, oh, this is real right here. Like, this is a real fight.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You hear a guy go, just real calmly go, oh, man, this is real right here. I was like, I love that guy. Because it's you're like, oh, I know this is all fake, but I know for a fact that, you know, they don't really like each other, so this must be real. It comes through on the mic. It's awesome. It's a heel feud, which I always love because it's so rare. You know, after the fans, they announce that they don't win the belts, there's a bullshit chant, and it's all children. It's not even the chicks. It just sounds like a bunch of little kids chanting bullshit, which is also hilarious. But back to the fan who's losing shit after the first fall. You hear her just screaming, and it makes no sense. It just sounds like, rah, 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 rah. And I'm like, what is this person going so crazy about? You can't, it's nonsense. And then it starts becoming clear, and you hear her say, because the heels keep fooling referee Carl Fergie, and you know he's doing typical ref stuff, and this chick is screaming, and I figured out because she repeats it over and over, screaming at the top of her lungs, especially after the first fall. We know that you're paid off, Fergie. We know that you're paid off, Fergie. And it's going on and on. It's insane. And then at one point, she stops. She's like, you're a yellow-bellied ref. You're a yellow belly. And it sounds like someone who's being held back.
It sounds like a person who had more. I mean, Fergie had more heat. That's just nuts. I thought, because like, it's funny when you think about it, because when the set came out, Death Valley Driver said it was Tommy Gilbert everyone freaking hated from the fans.
Oh, well, this one woman wants to kill Carl Hardy. And I mean, it's you can hear this. This isn't had them having fun or nothing. This woman wants him dead. But she curses, which I love. It's great. You're yellow, you know, you're paid off. And the last thing I wanted to mention was Bobby Fulton. After the second fall, and he's trying to get the crowd going and get behind Tom. He apparently then obtains a nightstick from Detective McCool Cop. He's working security. He's always like, what does he have? It's a fucking nightstick. And he's banging the ring with it, the ring apron, and the crowd's chin launch. He brings it into the ring, waving it around. I'm like, what the fuck? And an officer, McCool Cop is walking around. He's looking like a badass, like he can. And all I'm picturing is him in, you know, in the captain's office on Monday. McCool Cop, get in here. Yeah. What's up, Captain? He's like, Do I understand that you handed one of your weapons to a professional wrestler? You know, at the Coliseum the other night? I knew he wouldn't use on his opponent. They're a good man, and they needed something to rally that crowd. Listen, McCool Cop, I've had enough to hear of you pushing the line. You and your crazy ways.
Oh, shit.
One more time, and I want your bag.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I could not let that go. I created that little thing. I was like, why does Bobby Fulton have a cop's nightstick? And I look, and there's McCool Cop right behind him. I'm like, hey, he's the best. He knows what's going on.
He's McCool Cop, yeah.
That's right. And
here, Bobby, get the crowd with you. The nightstick always gets them going.
Just don't help me, buddy. But, otherwise, I enjoyed the first match more. I enjoyed the fuck out of this. And if you had told me that it was all going to be, because when you first brought it up, yeah, man, we have a really long Sting and Gilbert versus Fantastic match. And I was like, ugh. And I was like, I ended up enjoying these two matches so much.
I was like, man, how are they going to fill the time? Sting's pretty green here. I know they can do 12 minutes or 13, give us a shine, heat, go home. But man, 30 minutes is a lot to fill. And they did a damn good job on both sections, yeah. And really, it kind of made me even love the Fantastics even more. But
I
they're one of my five favorite tag teams of all time. So I mean,
But I totally forgot that Sting and Gilbert were pretty good tag team. I just don't remember that. And I was like, oh, that's right, they were.
Guys. And obviously, hot feud in Houston because the crowd was going ape shit on both these.
So the
for 30 minutes was with them the whole entire time. There was no lulls, really, you know, even though he had to get that nightstick going. They were hot, you know.
Yeah. And that was between calls, you know.
Good stuff. Hey, man. Remember, if you subscribe to NWAOnDemand.com, you get the first week free, $8.99. That's a great deal. Use the Tubi app. You can screen it from your telephone to your Roku and watch it on your TV. Watch the wrestling, man. We had a great Mania weekend, a lot of fun shows, a lot of good wrestlers. Keith Lee was a standout for me. I guarantee you that guy will be I felt pretty good because I was hanging out before, and I go, man, we're going to see some Keith Lee this week, and that guy will probably be in a big main WrestleMania match in the next 3 years, and it's great that he stood out at Evolve and had great matches all weekend long, and probably both day of the week.
Well, apparently there's a lot of NXT guys who are getting called out in the next few weeks, so...
There's a lot of things going on in wrestling right now. So, I mean, you know, again, just put down whatever you're doing, watch some wrestling, have fun. Johnny, you got anything you want to say, brother?
Non-wrestling-wise, but the season of Rick and Morty started the other day, and the first one is tremendous.
Awesome.
So if you're a fan, you need to check it out.
Have a great one, and have even a better one. Laters.
Laters.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some. And I need justice in my life. Here it comes, look high. And on the-